Hi, it's let's see, Wednesday morning before I go off to the ladies' class. My wife gets up for Shiva this morning, and I want to say a few words about something. This is I'm doing a podcast being sponsored by Mishpachas Mandelbaum, Binyamin Mandelbaum, who's doing it for his very good friend. One of his proudest boasts, I suppose, is that he's a good friend of Dr. Morris Friedman, Mo Friedman, whose mom, Edda Friedman, took a spill the other day and had to have an operation, broke bones and all that. When you're up in the age, anything past 30, falls are not good. Falls are not good. I understand she had an operation yesterday, and hopefully everything will go in the right direction. And it's very nice of Ben Mandelbaum to do this, but I know what good friends they are. And let's turn our attention over here. Meanwhile, as I was saying the other day, Lee J. Lowenstein has been sending me all kind of different ideas, many of which are thought-provoking, and I want to share one with, and he mentioned something to me, and now we're doing Parshas Ekev, and all these parshas in the beginning of Devarim, and Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his farewell address, which is pretty bitter, as I pointed out, and, you know, after 40 years of leading the Jews, and, you know, he knows he's not going to get into Israel, and Lija asked me this business about Moshe Rabbeinu and the bones of Yosef. He threw it up. And Lizzie Lowenstein threw it up. And that's an interesting idea. I tell you the truth, I never gave much thought to it. That's why I call it thought-provoking. And what I mean by that is, we all know that Moshe Rabbeinu took the bones of Yosef out. Vikach Moshe's Atzmos Yosef Imo. And the usual rig, you know, when everybody else was looking for money and Moshe Rabbeinu was looking for the Atzmos Yosef, and they brought it through the desert and they probably buried Yosef. After the death of Moses, they buried him in Israel, as we know, in Shechem. And he mentioned that Moshe kept the Atzmos Yosef with him in his house, in his tent. I don't remember that. Maybe I don't remember everything. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that they kept the Atzmos Yosef near the Aron in the Mishkan, but I could be wrong about that also. But one thing is interesting, and that is, I'll be honest with you, I never really gave much thought to it. That's why I appreciate the suggestion that here you have two, let me put it this way, compare and contrast. Here's your assignment. Compare and contrast Moshe Rabbeinu and Yosef HaTzadik. Moses and Joseph. Two people who were in Egypt. Two Jewish leaders. Different style. And one's A and one's B. Yosef came first, so he's A. Moshe Rabbeinu is B. And B made sure to take Atzmos Yosef with him when he left Egypt and carried him in the desert. And is the you know, if you look at it just regularly, you see Moshe Rabbeinu was a nice guy, which is true, and therefore he wanted to keep the promise that Yosef said, that when you leave, take me with you. That's true, no question about it. And, you know, it shows you that Moshe Rabbeinu was not into money and all that kind of stuff. That is true, no question about it. And yet, it does seem interesting that, you know, leader B is bringing along with him the physical remains of leader A. So is he thinking, as he leads the Jews through 40 years in the desert, remember, it wasn't supposed to be 40 years. That was causing the mess-ups. Is he thinking about the leadership model that was provided by Yosef? In other words, to be a good leader, you sometimes have to consult precedents. Look at the past. That's the uses of history, if you know how to use history. Very often, people think that, you know, the past repeats itself, and it never quite does. That's a common mistake in history. And like we had in the Vietnam War, for example, and, you know, it's always different. Second time around, third time is different. So you have to learn through philosophy, the branch of history, the discipline of history used to be part of philosophy. Now, I know it's not today, but I'm saying historically for thousands of years, I'm very serious about this. The way it was taught in colleges, universities, and such places, academies, is a branch of history. And the idea was, listen closely to what I'm saying. The idea was, you can't know everything about the past. You know the basic outlines of the past. And then what do you do with that knowledge? So some people are just historians, in the sense, or Balabatim like history. They like stories, Pirkei stories. You know, Jews like Jewish stories. Americans like stories about George Washington and the cherry tree. Englishmen like stories about St. George and the dragon, and so forth and so on. Okay, I mean, doesn't hurt anybody, okay? However, that's where a lot of mythology comes from the fact people like stories and they embellish them as they tell them. You know how it goes. Of course, the from world doesn't have any of that. Yeah, right, like our scroll. But, you know, that I understand. But the intellectuals, the thinkers, always regarded throughout the centuries history as containing a certain type of wisdom. But it's like a certain, you know, puzzle. You have to be able to look at the story of the past and properly analyze it in order to know what to do in the future. For example, if you see a country made a mistake by getting involved in too many wars, so you see over here, you know, if circumstances permit, I repeat, if circumstances permit, avoid wars. Now, sometimes you can't, right? But avoid wars. Or if you see they made a revolution, it turned out real bad, there's more killing than good, maybe that shows you be sober and don't make revolutions, Damazoi. That doesn't mean you never do. Depends what the status quo is. I'm just saying you have to intelligently pick from the past and apply the lessons to the present. And that could be what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing when he looks at the story of Yosef. Because, think about it, they represent two kinds of, two models of leadership. I mean, Yosef was successful in his way, but it's a certain model. Yosef was successful in keeping Jews from Golus. He demonstrated that before he became leader of the Jews. So what's the story? They sold him as a slave, then he rose to be viceroy, and then the brothers show up in the famine, and then the brothers settle in Egypt, and Vayichalkel Yosef is Echav Esaviv, and then Yosef was the one who supplied them. So he led, not by simply barking orders, but by cutting everybody checks. It's interesting. Vayichalkel Yosef is Echav, Yosef supplied food, and money and stuff for his families, meaning the 12 tribes settled in Goshen. You know the story like I know the story. And the result is they, were able to survive in an interesting way by living in a kind of a gilded ghetto, you might say, right? Like in a rich neighborhood in Muncie or Lakewood and not having much to do with anybody else. And they didn't hurt anybody, but they prospered. Okay, that was Yosef's way of doing it. Before that happened, God was preparing him through tests to see if he'd be the right guy to handle the Golus Mitzrayim, and he passed the test, and that, of course, is Eishes Potiphar, right? By turning her down at the last minute, he showed he's not going to fall for the Benos Moav. He's not going to get intermarried, although he did marry an Egyptian princess. I mean, that part is true, right? That part is true, but the bottom line is that, how should I put it? She converted. So he was able to live in the non-Jewish environment and even interact at the most intimate level with people who are not Jewish, but in a way that didn't hurt his Judaism. That's the trick of staying from Golus. So once he showed that he was able to avoid Eishes Potiphar, then next thing you know, the brothers show up. So he knew how to deal with people who are not Jewish without surrendering his own essence. And with Yosef, it worked as long as he was alive. But then after he died, it didn't work anymore. So it's a certain model. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu, unlike Yosef, was born in Golus. So Joseph was an Ivri, Kigunov Gonavti Me'erev Ho'Ivrim, right? And never denied it. Yosef, on the other hand, had plausible deniability. He was born in Golus, born in Egypt, and he was an Egyptian because he was raised in Pharaoh's family, as you know the story, right? So it's just interesting. Yosef turned out to be an FFB and Moshe Rabbeinu was a BT, because that's a fact. Unless you want to give me some frummy type explanation that somehow or other, Bas Paro, gave him over not only to be nursed by Yocheved, but to be raised by Yocheved. And at the age of 13 or 14, Yosef shows up in the palace of Egypt with Peas, and, an astronomer like Kapote and all the rest of it. But that's baloney. Yosef was raised by Bas Paro in Pharaoh's house, as we know. If you go over and rush him, he was an Egyptian general and all that kind of business. So if he encountered Judaism later in life, which he did, he's a Baal Tshuva. Now, Yosef was the ultimate court Jew in the sense he was able to dance on eggs. What do I mean, dance on eggs? He got to walk very delicately. The whole thing we admire about Yosef is He stayed totally from Jew, but at the same time, he was a successful viceroy in Egypt, which means he knew how to pachka around in Pharaoh's court. He knew how to interact with the Egyptian bureaucracy. We see in the Chumash that they tell you that he was wise enough to avoid fights with the Egyptian priesthood by excusing them from taxes and all that. You remember that. And from the land. Rakad Masa Konim Levado Elo Yosef. Yosef exempted them. So that way he didn't alienate them, which shows you how clever he was. And he survived his whole life. He danced on eggs. In other words, it never was true that eventually Pharaoh got tired of Joseph and killed him or something like that, which happened often in the Jewish history to the court Jews, but it didn't happen to Yosef. He made it all the way through. Sort of like Shmuel HaNogid, okay? Moshe Rabbeinu, it's just interesting to me, is not a dancer on eggs, right? You can't say that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to play both sides of the field, which Yosef was able to play both sides of the field. That's not who God chose to be the leader. Moshe was not a dancer on eggs. He sees an Egyptian beating up a Jew. He should have calculated and said, well, better keep my mouth shut. I'll try to work behind the scenes in the system. I'm serious about this, right? Maybe I can get the Egyptian taskmaster fired or something like that, right? He decked the guy and killed him. And not only that, he buried him right on the spot like they do in Jersey. So, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't stand it, right? He saw Egyptian beating up a Jew, couldn't take it. It's a famous essay by a non-from guy, Habid Amal Lo Yuchal, that Moshe Rabbeinu was built. Habid Amal Lo Yuchal, like the prophet Habakkuk says. That you can't stand, some people just can't stand to see injustice. Even though prudence would definitely dictate that you should avoid this. That's what you and I would do, to be perfectly honest. If you're driving, let's say, for example, your business takes you in some kind of inner city neighborhood, LaMashal, and you see some fight going on, you keep driving, baby. Because 9 out of 10, you'll just get in trouble if you get involved. It's not right and all the rest of it. I don't want to get killed. I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to be in jail. I don't want to, you know, be in a bunch of lawsuits and things like this. And Moshe wasn't built that way. He'd get out of the car no matter what neighborhood it was. And he tried to intervene, okay? So Moshe had a different personality than Yosef. And let me say this. When he killed the Egyptian, he broke with his past radically and joined a different team. He used to be one of the Orioles, now he became one of the Yankees, right? Now Yosef was in the Orioles and the Yankees. He was a Matzliach in Mitzrayim, and the Egyptians venerated Yosef, as you know. And which is why it says they couldn't do a slavery until Melchizedek Shiloyad as Yosef. Had he known Yosef, he wouldn't have been able to be so ungrateful. So Yosef never broke radically with his past, and Moshe did. So maybe, how should I put it? I don't know how you say this. So Yosef could handle a double identity, and Moshe could not. That's a trick. Even today, notice if I went around and asked all the listeners of the podcast or something like that, are you a Moshe or are you a Yosef? Now, both of you are from Jews. But are you a Moshe model or a Yosef model? Okay? A Moshe model is, you better get a job in chinuch. You know what I'm saying? Better get a job in kosher meat market. You know, a kosher store. And deal only with Jews because you're not going to make it out in the workplace. You can't interact successfully with people that are not like you. People of another faith or another ethnicity or something like that. It ain't going to work. So stay in Kollel. Go to, you know, be a fifth grade rabbi, whatever it is. Then you'll be in Eretz Goshen, so to speak. You'll be B'toch HaMachaneh. You can live in Baltimore, Lakewood, Muncie, New York, Chicago, wherever, Detroit. You know, it's fine. Toronto. And you'll just always be in Goshen. You'll always be B'toch HaMachaneh. Because you can't handle a double identity. Ivri Anochi, that's who I am, Ben Ayid. What about your national identity? It's a legal thing, but they don't identify with it. Yosef wasn't like that. Yosef could say, I'm a patriotic Egyptian, which he was, no question about it. He significantly, the Chumash goes to the trouble of telling you all the reforms that Yosef introduced in Egypt, which the way the Chumash is supposed to present it, helped Egypt. So even though you could think it's with it, but it helped Egypt. Moshe didn't do anything for Egypt. Now, again, if you go by the Midrashim and all that, so he'd been a general in the Egyptian army, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, that was Moses A, not Moses B. Moses A was not Jewish. Moses B was Jewish. Once he hit the Egyptian, he totally left the Egyptian team and totally embraced the Jewish team. I mean, that's the story. He had to run away from the country. So one could handle double identity and one could not. So what I mean to say is, you have people today in America who can handle both. I mean, I'll tell you the truth. I wasn't thinking about this. My brother-in-law just passed away. I mean, you wouldn't know him. He had very high security clearance and whatever he did, I don't know. And he did. Let me put it this way. He made significant contributions to the national defense. And to tell you the truth, Baltimore, Maryland is full of guys like this. You know, they just look like, you know, geeks and nerds and so on and so forth. And they are doing very significant things. I'm not going to say what. And I don't even know what. Very significant things contributing to the national defense of the United States of America. There are other people who are very integrated in American society in other ways, at the same time being totally from. I don't want to say Joe Lieberman, but you get what I'm saying. You know, he's not exactly, but you know, that sort of thing is possible. But it's a trick. So are you a Yosef or are you a Moshe? The guy who's a Yosef does not need to teach in a school. The guy who's a Yosef doesn't need to be a Mashgiach working for the Star K. The guy who's a Yosef can be a very successful, business person, college professor, even politician, and so forth and so on. And at the same time be, you know, he could be a Supreme Court judge in the United States of America. And at the same time, you know, be a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, right? We have federal judges, for example, successful ones, who have been Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. You could do it, okay? Now, but that means you're Yosef. So it's different models. Like I said before, when Moshe killed the Egyptian, he said, I'm breaking with Team A, I'm doing Team B. Now, you know, Moshe, this was a function of fact, he couldn't stand injustice. Yosef could take injustice. After all, he reduced the Egyptians to serfdom. This is the model of the Jews sometimes in the Gaulis, like the Jews in Poland or the rest of it, when they came to Poland, they had to work within the system. The system was that the nobles ran everything. The peasants were like slaves, so the Jews had to accommodate to that. Of course, that led to a blowback when you had Khmelnytsky and all the others. I get it. Now, what's really interesting to me is God handpicked Moses. God did not handpick Joseph. Isn't that interesting? No, the Chumash goes to the trouble of telling you a whole ganza maisa that Moshe was recruited. He was a shepherd in Midian. He followed the sheep to the mountain. He saw a burning bush. And Hashem says, I want you. And you know, it was like a job interview. And Moshe kept saying, I don't want the job. I don't want the job. I don't want the job. And Hashem says, I want you, 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 you. If you go by Chazal, it went on for days. That was what Chazal say. It went on for days. So, I mean, that's a heavy recruitment, man. Okay? And it wasn't a question over salary. So what were they fighting over? It was a heavy recruitment. Hashem wanted a Moshe type guy. I guess it's Mashma. I need somebody who breaks with Mitzrayim and totally identifies with Yisrael. I want someone who may take the skills he picked up in Mitzrayim, because Moshe undoubtedly did that, but now is no longer there. So Hashem waited for Moshe to alienate his Egyptian background by killing the taskmaster and Pharaoh, Vayivakish Laharogis Moshe. The Parano put Moshe on the hit list, and Moshe had no choice but to run away. As far as we can see, Hashem never handpicked Yosef. Now, I get it, you know, there's Hashkacha Prat, there's no question about that. But it's not like you have in the Chumash a story that Hashem comes to Yosef and say, you will be my choice to prepare the way for Klal Yisrael to go into Golus Mitzrayim. You know, if you speak sort of in Hashkafa, broad, philosophical way, you can say that this is part of the divine plan. And that is true. But you don't find Hashem handpicked him. And it's just interesting. Now, there are hints about it. Yosef had dreams when he was young that all the sheaves would bow down to him and the sun, the moon, the stars. But, you know, and I don't think Yosef ran away from it. I mean, if he was boasting about it when he was a kid, sounds like he was interested in power. Moshe doesn't come across this way. Moshe kept saying, no, no, no. Think about what I'm saying. Moshe Rabbeinu, who was close to 80 years old, said like this, I've had my life. I don't mind spending the rest of my life as a son-in-law to Yisrael, being a shepherd in Fashtunk and a Midian. Avek zetz in the pekel Rabbeinu, as they say. Bikesh Moshe leishev b'shalva kavs alav rugzo shel, you know, B'nai Yisrael or Paro or something. It's an interesting model. So they're very different. Now, everything I just told you, Moshe Rabbeinu must have known. So why did he keep the bones of Yosef with him? I'm not sure. Maybe contrast himself with Yosef? Or maybe he said Yosef was a certain type of successful Jewish leader because he was able to ease the way for Klal Yisrael to live in Egypt and not become unfrum, at least during his lifetime. On the other hand, Moshe must have known that after Yosef died, it didn't work anymore. So maybe he kept, I'm just thinking out loud, maybe he kept the bones of Yosef with him as a kind of abject lesson. In other words, to use modern terminology, traditionalism goes so far, but you have to have chinuch. Okay? Today in America, to give you an example, somebody can say, I come from a very firm family. My grandparents were this, my parents were this, and all the rest of it. That works when it works, but often it doesn't work. I don't think anybody listening to this, or most people listening to the podcast, would say, I don't have to send my children to a day school, for example, because I come from a very firm family where we're Shomer Torah, so we keep Shabbos and all the rest of it, and my children will see the role model provided by the family and the parents and the grandparents and that model and the community in which we live. And other than that, you can go to public school. It doesn't work, you know? 99 of 100 times, it does not work, okay? So Yosef seems to have represented a kind of traditionalism. He, to me, I would call him the epitome of traditionalism. How come he didn't do it with the wife of Potiphar? It's very interesting. It doesn't say, because he looked in the Torah, he looked in the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, a nachris is usher with this lav and that thing and this thing and the other thing without getting into legalities of it. And he didn't, like, you know, go down the list and say, this is prohibited in the Mishnah Torah of Maimonides. He thought of his father. And when he thought of his father, he said, I can't do this. That works when you knew the father. In other words, if Yosef would have had a son in Egypt, Ephraim and Manasseh, and let's say they were tempted by some kind of Ishus Potiphar type situation, let's put it, and I wasn't there. I don't know what happened to them. You can't say, Nizdam lo dmuk nosho Yaakov Avinu. They never met Yaakov Avinu until late in life. You see what I'm saying? So traditionalism really is like a Torah Shabbat pet. Depends on kind of an oral transmission when it's there. And that's the essence of Yosef. Moshe Rabbeinu kind of represents theology and chinuch. Moshe Rabbeinu says, he represents the leadership model, which says, don't do it simply because I do it. Don't do it simply because our parents did it or our ancestors did it. Do it because of theology and the reality, spirituality of God. And if you don't believe me, I'll do Nisim v'Neflos, because if there anybody was Mr. Nisim v'Neflos, Shalom B'Derech HaTev, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. He's the one that does all the miracles. The 10 plagues, the splitting of the sea, the Maimon Har Sinai, all the miracles in the desert, all the rest. In other words, basically, they were constantly surrounded by miracles. And if Shalom B'Derech HaTev, if they were constantly surrounded by miracles, it means that was what was required to get them out of their Egyptian way of thinking. Because by that time, they're already Memtah Shari Tumah, as we know. And once you've been brainwashed into Americanism or Egyptianism, whatever it is, it is very hard to get out of there. So Yosef represents a model to keep people within the Machane and prevent the bad stuff from coming in. Moshe represents the opposite, where you're trying to get people back into the firm stuff. And it's not a question of keeping the bad stuff out. Bad stuff they have in them because they grew up that way. They're meant to shari tum, and now you're trying to sort of, what's the right word? Clean them of it, you know, deprogram. I'll use that word, right? Detox, deprogram. That's a lot harder. It's easier to prevent somebody from becoming an alcoholic than if somebody's already an alcoholic to get them to stop and get the bad results, you know, the bad effects out. It's hard, okay? So Moshe keeps with him the bones of Yosef, you know, as a different model, but maybe it was a positive model, maybe a negative model, or both. In other words, when Moshe Rabbeinu looked at the Atzmus Yosef, and with this I'll conclude, when Moshe Rabbeinu looked at the Atzmus Yosef, as he did all the time, did he say, here's the guy that kept everybody from? Or did Moshe Rabbeinu say, here's the guy who once he died, the kids all went off the derech? Both are true. And what does that mean to me as a leader? Do I expect everybody to say, well, Moshe Rabbeinu used to do this, therefore we'll do it? Or do I say, no, we have a Seres HaDibros, we have a Torah, we have a whole, you know, Torah Shebikhtav, Torah Shebaalpeh, and that's to keep everybody on the derech once I am gone, because Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm not going to be there to get into Egypt. I mean, into Eretz Yisrael, excuse me. right? I'm not going to get there. They're going to have to do without me. If they have to do without me, then it can't simply be the memory of what Moshe Rabbeinu used to do. That works when it works. It doesn't work when it doesn't work. Anyway, I thought it's a very intriguing idea. I don't know if I've done justice to it, but this is what occurs to me over here. Again, I want to thank Ben Mandelbaum, Mishpachas Mandelbaum. I know the grandparents, the Cohns, we in Baltimore, boy, I know them. And they're doing this as a schuss for the recovery of the mom, Mrs. Etta Friedman, mom of Morris Friedman and Kenny Friedman and Ira Friedman. And I'm very fond of all of them. And I hope she really will have a refuah shlema bekarav. She needs anybody that's over 50 needs a refuah shlema big time. And I hope she'll have one and everything should be good.